In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Liberal heads are exploding. They're popping like, I don't know, like maybe it's like light bulbs thrown on ice. All over the revelations that the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton's campaign paid for the Russian dossier against Donald Trump with a British spy using Russian contacts. And the media doesn't like it because it goes against the narrative. The narrative was Hillary Clinton was the victim of collusion. I don't know what it looks like to you when you're using Russian hookers to substantiate a document against Donald Trump, who's no Prince Charming. And another story, more liberal heads exploding about Uranium One. Millions and millions of dollars funneled to the Clintons, to the Clinton Foundation. Bill Clinton making $500,000 for a speech in Moscow for the Uranium Boys. The Uranium board members donating money to the Clinton Foundation, and the Obama administration allowing it all to go through, even though there was an FBI informant talking about the shenanigans and the bribery and the quid pro quo going on. And the Obama administration threatened him, put a gag order on the guy. And just the other day, as I came to sit down and do this, Victoria Tensing, the lawyer for the informant, she says that the Washington Post, ABC, NBC, and other stations, other networks, have not called her about the informant. Have we learned nothing about politics? Look, I'm not saying Trump is a prince. Actually, I think he's a vulgar barbarian. And I think there's a lot wrong with him. And they should, investigators should go all the way up the chain on whether Donald Trump colluded with the Russians. So far, I haven't seen any evidence. But at the same time, we have to look at the other side, too. And what I'm seeing is kind of like, you don't want to say I told you so, but basically all of you told us so. And that is that there is a group, a cadre, a political wing inside liberal media that is ignoring this Uranium One story. They're saying, it's Fox News, or it's nothing, don't worry about it. Or they're grabbing on to say, Hillary Clinton didn't, you know, it wasn't just Hillary who approved the Uranium One deal, so don't blame her. Meanwhile, of course, Hillary Clinton's not talking about the other business with the dossier, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz is not talking, former chairman of the DNC, or says she doesn't know anything about how the DNC and Hillary's campaign spent $9 million for, you know, to hear stories from Russian hookers about Donald Trump, whether that happened or not. The point being, there's a fetid swamp. You know that whole thing about drain the swamp? I'm not saying that Trump isn't part of it, but I'm saying this. If you're from Chicago and you know the Chicago way, then what you're seeing is Chicago way writ large in Washington. And if there's one thing we haven't learned in my business, in the media business, is that there are tens of millions of people who don't believe what we're saying because we're ignoring or we're trying to mitigate the effects of the news stories on the old narrative, which was Trump was illegitimate because the Russians elected him, and therefore Hillary should have been president, or some skata, okay, that they were saying. This is John Cass, mild-mannered columnist, syndicated, of the Chicago Tribune. And this is the Chicago Way with Jeff Carlin. We're going to have Pat Brady on, and we're going to talk about him and his fights with Dan Proft. We're also going to have Susana Mendoza, the certified badass of Chicago politics, the Illinois comptroller who confronted one of my old topics of conversation, John Quarters Boyle. But before we go any further, I got to ask Jeff Carlin, producer, fine producer of the Ro Khan and Anna Show, WGN. Jeff, have we learned anything about how the people, how tens, 60, 70, 80, 100 million people view the media if we're not pursuing these stories the same way that they pursued the, you know, Russian collusion, Trump, Trump, Russia, Trump? A wise man wrote a column recently in which he even mentioned that even in, you know, that kind of happy talk in between broadcast anchors, even perhaps on a medium like radio, you hear Trump, collusion, Russia, you know, just happy talk stuff, just sticking it to him. Okay, fine. He's in politics. Stick it to him. He deserves getting stuck. But I'm not hearing that about Hillary. What lesson have we missed, and how, what effect does that have on the business of journalism?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not surprising. I mean, no one's going to be surprised that Hillary isn't being talked about in the way Trump or it's not even followed the uranium piece of this.
Why not?
Her ties to Moscow.
Why?
Well, I mean, she's not president.
Okay, but still, they're of the Hillary Party. When I see, John Kelly getting ripped, you know, for a small detail in his dramatic soliloquy about a father losing a child, and in the war, and they all rip him. Or I see Jeff Flake being treated as a hero in the pages of respected newspapers. As a foil to rip on Trump. I understand what that is. That's like desperate partisanship. Okay, fine. You want to play that? That's part of the game. But you don't? When I see people literally ignoring the Uranium One story and the, Hillary and Debbie Wasserman Schultz paying $9 million for the Trump hooker thing, and they don't even... They don't know what happened. They can't answer.
Didn't know anything about it.
When you see people ignoring that, what does that tell you about our business, about journalism and the republic?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It's got to be... Come on.
No, it's just... It's disappointing. And the whole... it's depressing, really. It's really depressing, the whole thing. There's just this partisanship in media just is killing us. And it's... absolutely. There are talking heads on the liberal side that won't say one word against Hillary or about Hillary or about anybody in the liberal side of things until the target is so ripe and so rich that they can't miss it, like a Mark Halperin type. Like, they say, oh, well, here's somebody.
Well, that's easy, right?
Right.
Somebody says racism. Somebody says sexism. That's part of your worldview in which everything's identity politics. And it's kind of easily understood and bad. Not right. No one's advocating
putting
your hands on people. But this is something else. This tells me that our culture is, our media culture is really in serious difficulty.
Mm.
The last time during 2016 election, a wise man who does a show called The Chicago Way, a podcast, 8 months before the election wrote a column saying, she's going to lose. And everyone thought I was crazy. Well, guess what? No, she lost for the reasons I said. And I think it's not because I'm brilliant. Because even though I am, I don't think that's the reason. I think the reason is too many of us in our business, not you, I have to say not you, forget where you came from. It's like we don't even talk to people. All we do is get on Twitter. A lot of us tweet each other's thoughts. It becomes an echo chamber in which a warm bath in which like we're little babies. And we're in warmth, like in mommy's liberal womb, and she's holding us in, like, the Matrix or something.
Right.
And that's not reporting. That's not going out and talking to people.
Right. And the crazy piece of all of it is that it's not just in media, too. I mean, you hear the stories about how in D.C. back in the day, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, the lawmakers would break the hill, and they would go and they would share a Manhattan or a cigar in a bar, and they would.
Or a waitress sandwich if you're Ted Kennedy, right?
Well, that's
Lion of feminism. Yeah. Right.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's true, I'm sure, as well. But the point was that there was this humanistic, we can break bread. We're not just politicians, or we're not just journalists. You know, people they compartmentalize a little bit better. And there were journalists who would do their job as a journalist, and then the day would break, and then they could go, and they could be feminist, or they could be pro-liberal, or they could be a conservative, mm-hmm. or they could be another person outside of their profession. It didn't define who they were. Now it's inverted. Your political leaning defines who you are, top to bottom, no matter where you go, what you do, wherever, who you talk to.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's because
the federal government is so large that it reaches every aspect of our being. It's the liberal view that they can create heaven on earth through government.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the view of everybody who's ever gone into Chicago City Hall that's not how it works and that's not a good thing. I mean, I was a kind of a democratic liberal. Okay, I wasn't completely liberal, but I was a lot more progressive before I started covering government. And after you do, you realize how horrid it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one. Do a thought experiment with yourselves as you're listening to this. And think of who people you read, people you listen to on the air, views and so forth. Who's avoiding the Uranium One and the Russian dossier Hillary and Debbie Wasserman Schultz paid $9 million and don't know anything about it story? And the FBI informant that's going to be brought before Congress and all that. Ask yourself, why aren't you reading it? Why aren't you seeing it? Who's not talking about it? And that'll tell you a lot about your choices and the choices out there. Because it's almost like they don't want to engage, Jeff. It's like they can't. Look, did Trump say the Hollywood stuff, on the Access Hollywood tape? Yes, he did. It was Bill O'Reilly accused and settled cases about grabbing women and being sexually predacious, right?
For insane amounts of money.
For insane amount of money. Guess what? I wrote about it. I wrote a story, a column saying Killing O'Reilly was written by Bill O'Reilly. And people are still on Facebook saying, why didn't you ever write about O'Reilly? Well, I did, morons.
And that's the thing. And it drives me nuts because when we worked at a different station and it was, had a conservative lilt to it, just no matter what. I mean, just did.
Yes, I was comfortable there until they fired me.
Right. And then I came over, and now I'm working for a station as more of a liberal progressive lilt.
It's kind of a general
news, but
it does.
But look at it. I mean, in general, and we were doing the same things we did about the president at the time, which was Barack Obama over at LS. Now that we're doing it over here at WGN, but now it's a different president, and it's still the same kind of. Hey, sink your teeth into the president is doing something stupid or goof this up or what have you. It's criticism. People call us and then they complain, oh, you never did anything about Obama. Why are you doing like this? And it's like,
well,
but
what are you saying? You did.
Right.
I did.
I'm saying the show that I worked on, we did. And the fact that you just discredit anybody, what your perception of who they come or where they are, instead of listening to the word and then just taking it into your own head and being like, hey, does this make sense? Is this really what's happening, or is there something else going on?
But it's also true that among media in Chicago, there was a love fest, and nationally.
Oh no!
I never saw the love fest of Obama. I mean, okay, here's one. There were journalists renting hotel rooms, lifting glasses of champagne, overlooking Obama's inaugural. I mean, not inaugural. His one of his great speeches in Chicago. Election night. Okay, here's my problem. If we're going to kiss his butt, which many did, for reasons that were quite odd because they didn't know who he was.
Right.
They didn't realize he was an empty suit from Springfield with Tony Resco, on his arm. I mean, he was like, I don't know. He was the boy. He was the young boy, like in the King Arthur story.
Right.
He was the young knight who pulled the sword from the stone of reform. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I understand why they were kissing his butt so much. He was African American, the first African American. It was significant. He was also charming and smart and all that. And they were inoculating themselves with their love of Obama from charges of being racist. Because if you criticized Obama, and I did, and I had the Obama chia heads, remember, that's where we grew hopium for the Washington Press Corps so they could smoke it and think everything was good. Remember when they thought deficits were okay? Now they don't. You had a sense that the entire journalism world was the Obama world. Like he was Mr. Tumnus from the little fawn, the gentle fawn from Narnia that gave Susie the cakes and the little, honey-sweetened tea and played a flute and she fell asleep. Yeah, that's how it was with the Washington Press Corps and that guy. It was. And now, and people know now that Trump is not getting the same treatment. He doesn't deserve the same based on how he's acted. He's been a combative fellow rather than a sly one. He's not a silky like Obama, but still people want equal treatment, and he wasn't, and you're not seeing it. And that's what frightens me about the Republic, because it drives more and more people to the Vulgarian, the Visigoth with the red hair, as opposed to less. And that's dangerous for all of us.
Change and promises made. What's it matter if you don't get paid? Hope, change and promises made. What's the matter if you don't get paid?
But right now we're going to talk to Pat Brady, former prosecutor, former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, to talk about the man in the leather vest riding his Harley running for governor. First of all, before we get into anything, you know that William Shatner, Star Trek fame, Captain Kirk.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The face of Michael Myers.
Is reportedly the voiceover guy for this Rauner ROM pitch to Jeff Bezos, who's a Star Trek fan.
Right.
And there was a Star Trek episode in which Captain Kirk lands on the planet that's based on Chicago.
Oh, yeah, it goes back in time.
Right.
And they had the heaters. Like, what is this, a heater? On the communicators.
They're heaters and what are those things? I was a big Trekkie then.
Well, they were their communicators.
Uhura, whose name is Freedom. My first interracial, fantasy when I was, 12, yeah.
Didn't Kirk mm-hmm. make out with her in one episode?
He made out
sure
with
did.
Her. The Greek gods forced them to kiss. It was just stupid.
That's why you liked it.
The Greek gods?
The Greek gods forced him, and then it
and
was...
And there was a character, Michael Dunn was the actor. He was like a Peter Dinklage of his time. A great actor, and also very, little
diminutive.
Person. Diminutive.
I liked it when Scotty got hammered.
And because I got short legs, my brothers used to call me, what was his name in that show? Miguelito or something? I don't know. But what about Star Trek? William Shatner, should he do the voice of the, Chicago
sure,
gangsters
makes,
the way?
Well, I don't
Pat
know.
Brady?
Makes sense. I thought it was a good idea.
We're talking to Pat Brady, former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, former state and federal prosecutor, friendly fellow, excellent golfer, I'm told, and chairman of New Horizons.
Next Generation Strategy.
Damn it.
Close enough, right?
More important, father of four lovely children.
Father of four lovely children.
Lincoln Forum.
But also, here's my problem here, Jeff. You know how when you have friends that fight?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? When you have friends, you like, say, guys, and they're fighting. Where do you go? How
like
do you
fisticuffs?
Deal?
Or?
Not fisticuffs. Guys who actually sure. get along and they golf. They're good, very competitive golfers. How do you, where do you go with that?
A dance-off? That's what I would... No?
But you don't take sides, but you like them both.
Right. I tell them to take a dance off. Whoever cuts the rug better than not get my
So vote. Let's talk to Pat Brady, because there's a program on television in Chicago which I think tries very hard and spends millions of dollars of underwriters' money to become the most boring damn thing you ever watch on TV. Basically, it's like a room of progressive liberals who have no sin and don't talk about anything like conservatives or anything. It's like, what were we saying earlier before the break? It's like, what was that thing, the metaphor of the toast with the...
Oh, yeah. It's essentially, it's a knife, a dry knife being dragged across dry toast. That's the...
I don't agree.
The margarines... The margarine's in the other room, and if you really want, like, cheese or, like, strawberry preserves, it's, like, against the law in that land.
For the record, I like WTTW. I have some great programs.
I love public TV, WTTW. Chicago Tonight is a little drier than...
Enough butt kissing, okay? Enough butt kissing.
I don't have cable, so I got to rely on TTW.
I like it, too. I love Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And Arthur, the little chipmunk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he was so kind. But in that, there was no kindness that I heard of between two of my good friends, Pat Brady, the aforementioned, who's here before us, and Dan Proft, the acerbic conservative. I heard you guys kind of like blew up the room, and Eddie Arruza was freaking out and trying to stop the fight.
What? His eyes got a little big. It wasn't that bad. It was a good debate. And we can have debates within the party, in my view is... that in a state like Illinois, and within the context of these discussion got heated, we're talking about Steve Bannon and what he's doing to the Republican Party nationally because he's taken out these two United States senators. Well, we could likely, as Republicans, lose those seats in very conservative states.
Not in Arizona.
That lady is a whack job.
Hey, listen.
She is a nut.
We're not going to allow, I don't allow John, liberals listen. To call people whack jobs, and I don't allow liberal Republicans to call
well,
people
you know,
whack jobs.
You have to take exception okay. because I know the state very well. I used to live there, went uh-huh. to college there, mm-hmm. and she's a whack job.
It's a Chicago state, right? There's a lot of Chicago people in there.
Yeah, if you go out there at spring break into the restaurants.
And a lot of real estate from Chicago.
Yeah, McCain used to come on all the time on Cochran and say.
You're like, a buddy of his. You like
yes,
him?
Yep, I do. And he would come on and say, would you get the stupid Blackhawk sweaters out of our stadium? And they're gone now. I think they don't even have a team.
Okay, let's get to it. Because before I call Jay Doherty from City Club and pitch him on a new public series, you don't want to hear this? Pat Brady and Dan Proft talking at the City Club for lunch about the future of the Republican Party in Illinois, time of Rauner and Ron.
Are you going to moderate it?
I would moderate. Yes, I would.
You should moderate it.
I will moderate that because I care about you both deeply.
Well, here's the deal.
I don't want you to put each other's fangs in each other's necks.
All kidding aside. Yeah. Dan and I are friends. You and I are friends.
I
we don't agree on everything, but we respect each other.
Right.
And I think fundamentally agree on... a lot of things, more things than we disagree on.
We agree that Madigan's terrible.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I didn't get a chance to finish up with that last night, but whatever Dan and I disagree on, we agree that Madigan's the problem. But here's the issue I was talking about with Bannon, because Dan has his group, the Illinois Policy Institute, that's doing the same thing in Illinois that Bannon's doing nationally. And they put these people in the primaries, litmus test conservatives that meet the things that they like, both social and economic conservatives, which always makes my head scratch because I thought IPI was an economic conservative
you're
thing.
You're not a social conservative. Let's
well, no, it. But they're supposed to be economic conservative. But the point is, that's great. And I'm not, I understand and respect social conservatives. They're part of the Republican Party. But when you're putting people in districts that maybe, if they get enough in a primary where nobody votes to win the nomination, then they lose in the general. The point is, we have an uphill climb in whatever we do with Madigan and the control he has. We can't put candidates up there that can't win. And these guys, their track record, as much as I love Dan, the Illinois Policy Institute wins nothing. When Pat Hughes, like Jeannie Ives, was going to run against Mark Kirk in 2010, he's the conservative savior, he got 19%. 19% in the primary. Same thing if Jeannie Ives runs. She's got 16,000 in the bank. My point is, they're welcome to run. I welcome primaries. But let's not for once be stupid. We have to be together, and we can't waste our time and money and energy in the primaries.
Knowing that I'm not taking the role of Dan Proft because I'm a lot smarter and better looking than he is.
You have a better vocabulary.
And I don't.
I have a, yeah, I don't know about that. I love John. But
we used to do WLS. When he'd use a big word, I had a bell.
Yeah,
I'd ring the bell.
Because I didn't know what it meant, and I was asking for help.
Yep. I just say state schools. I'm a state school guy.
Right. But I think that in some respects that what you're missing in your analysis is that conservatives generally don't like the big government moderates, Republican types, and on the other side, the moderate government Republicans see the conservatives as a threat to their power.
Yeah,
and so
threat
I don't
to what
think,
power? We don't have anything.
I don't know. Last time I checked, Nancy Kimmy was cashing checks. Right?
That's another story.
Right? That's nice being a lobbyist in Springfield.
That's another story.
If you know the Republicans.
Story, but I'm really just trying to deal in facts of this state. Name me one issue or highly identified as one issue candidate on the social side that's won. Alan Keyes. Remember Al Salvi that beat Bob Kustra? Bill Brady didn't win against a guy who was a running mate of a guy that's now in prison for 14 and a half years. I mean, the math doesn't work.
Right,
it's not like I'm against it. And I totally am empathetic to their position. But what I don't get is, let's be smart. Let's use our common sense.
Okay, speaking of common sense, and again, we're going to have Prof in next week. Okay, Jeff?
Hey, if you want to do the City Club and tee it up.
Oh, that would be good.
It'd be Ali Frazier, Thriller.
You know, here's the problem with that. That would be interesting because conservatives and Republicans, which I used to be a Republican until I think it was Bob Schlander and Bill Cellini. I just left.
Oh God! Yeah.
Right. And you had
I replaced Schlander.
I know you did.
They
and
got
you didn't put and you know what? I was hoping when Schlander was chairman, the national committeeman, that he would put like a little chocolate mint on my pillow at the Republican National
Convention. Oh, you
didn't get one? No, he didn't. Okay, but at least there's a debate.
Sure.
On that side.
Yeah.
On the Democratic side, where's the debate, Jeff Carlin?
Debate about
anything on the Democratic side. What debate?
J.B. Madigan? He's not going to debate anybody.
Right?
Yeah, no.
What's the debate with Pritzker? Is it how large of a butt crack that will be used in the plumber commercials, you know? And are those plumber commercials going to be animated or, you know, real plumber
right.
butts?
I think the debate is Thanksgiving dinner at Pritzker's or Madigan's? Who's hosting this year?
I'll have a
you know, that's always a family problem,
yeah,
right? That's a family thing.
That's a great point.
I'm not going to their house again.
All right, so let's talk about Rauner because last time I spoke to you, I think not on the show, but for a column, I was pretty hard on him.
Sure.
When still am. I liked him. I wanted him to win. I talked to people very close to him and said, hey, I introduced Rauner to the readers of the Chicago Tribune when he was just starting and said, this guy has to be the governor. He goes and supports taxpayer-funded abortions, which I think was like, why don't you blow off your foot, which he did. Then he supports sanctuary state legislation, whether it's like severely sanctuary state or just symbolic. The point of politics is symbolism, too. So he blew off the other foot. What does a guy do with no feet?
Well, here's where we had this discussion a little bit last time on the sanctuary stuff. First of all, on the sanctuary stuff, had he not been there, and had we had a Democrat in the governor's mansion, that what they wanted to put through was about 8 pages long of nonsense. He got it down to something pretty simple. So give him credit for being there to stop it. On the HB 40, on the taxpayer, quote unquote, taxpayer-funded abortions for poor people, this, first and foremost, this is Mike Madigan putting this in front of him at a time when it's going to be politically, put him in a political trick box, which it did. And I think he did what he thought he believed in and was the right thing to do. And I think politically, and I don't think it was a political decision, I think, and this is where we disagree, I think it helps him because when the argument comes down to providing a medical service, which has been legal for 43 years, whether you like it or not, and I'm not a big pro-choice guy, but it's legal. And if poor people can't get it and rich women can, that's a problem that Republicans have, not appealing to people outside the very wealthy. So politically, I think he's fine with it. And I know a lot of people are upset. I respect that. I respect it.
Like the cardinal?
Well,
who says that the governor lied to him?
Well, you know, here's my question with the cardinal, and I would say this for the cardinal we're sitting here. He gets awfully involved in Illinois politics
Doesn't
awfully
he?
Quickly, and I don't go to church when I do go to church to hear – to be lectured to, because when he first came here, he came out and endorsed the labor unions, which is right. Great. I'm pro-labor unions. But why did he get involved? This is church and state. I get it because the deal they got the scholarships for the Catholic right. schools. Good. Good for them. But I don't necessarily care to hear the Cardinal opining on Illinois politics.
It's like when I go to a football game, which I don't because I like football played with the feet now. You know, because I'm a European socialist.
We could do a city club on that one, too.
Football.
But I don't want to get lectured to by some guy on his knees during the national anthem. Just stop it, okay? Same thing.
Yeah, I just, come on. But fine, the Cardinal, and he's got his constituency, and that's fine. But I think in the long run, and I think the governor had a problem in this summer with bringing the Policy Institute people in that were too ideologically stringent. Politics is about compromise. That's why we saw this bad veto session. A lot of these vetoes that the governor had over the summer were drafted by the Policy Institute people, which he got creamed on.
A lot of the governor's problems, Bill. I mean, Pat, I always confuse you with your brother.
He's no relation.
I know, he's not.
But don't call me Greg
or
Bobby.
I know Bill Brady's not his brother. Bill Brady orders meatloaf at Ditka's when we're at lunch. I'm like, what are you doing?
That was a column, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I can't trust a man eating meatloaf in a restaurant. The problem is that the staff work, I'm not going to criticize the Illinois Policy Institute because I don't think they were there long enough.
Through the vetoes.
I think that a lot of the problems that Mr. Rauner has, besides the fact that I don't think he kind of understood who he is also attributed to bad staffing from the beginning, because a lot of this stuff was set up that shouldn't even have come up. They should have fought it off somehow behind the scenes before it even became an issue.
The thing is, and I think HB 40 is kind of a great example of it. My point being that the speaker has so much control of the legislative process. I mean, nobody has as much power as he does in all the committees and how legislation gets through.
And the news.
In the news. And
he controls the news cycle.
It's tough to navigate. And I think particularly in the governor's first comm shop, they did a very nice job of tamping down anything bad that happened. When the IPI people got in, it was just for 4 months, open season. And I think that's where you saw a lot of bad press with no blowback. But anyway, that's my point is that's over. And I think he's had a good couple weeks. He's got a real good comm. He brought Patty Shue in and some other really good communications people. And so I think he's righted the ship, which happens.
Well, the jury's out on this.
It is. And we've got almost exactly a year to debate it.
Now, before one thing about the governor's race, however it goes. Shut up, Judge. I can't. Judge is calling me. Some judge. I don't know.
Are you a parole officer?
I'm not saying. After the governor's race, there's another race. Okay?
Ooh, I know.
And let's talk about the Democratic side, Jeff Carlin.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which is, when you're like white-haired and old and grumpy and suburban like I am now, you forget how you were when you were skinny wearing Armani and Urban in the city with black hair like I had. But
did you die? I've been dying mine.
Yeah, you do. Me and you both. We dye it white. but here's the deal. Whenever there's a governor's race and then there's the mayor's race.
It's unbelievable,
isn't it? So if you're the mayor of Chicago, do you want a big turnout in the Democratic primary with African-Americans and Latinos getting excited over the only candidate they can get excited over, Kennedy, because they're not going to get excited over Pritzker, right before you're going up for re-election?
And you have problems in both those communities.
What's going on there, Jeff Carlin?
Yikes.
How come we don't hear about that from our cracker jack political analysts besides Mr. Brady and me?
Because there's a hurricane in D.C. and everyone's sucking up all the air.
We'll get there.
I don't know. It's crazy.
Let me give you a word. Yeah. Two words. Laquan McDonald.
We got to go down and watch that?
Yeah, we are.
McMahon's a buddy of mine's the lead prosecutor on that.
It should be fascinating because here's the question. If you're Rahm Emanuel, you want that. If you're Kennedy, if it happens in April, you want this thing to be a trial. I'm not saying that Kennedy is cynical, but I'm just talking about the politics, okay? Like, if you guys don't like polls, you know, you don't read Tom Bevin's poll stuff, I'm sorry, then you might as well be a meat puppet, because everybody in politics reads polls. The same thing with this. If there's a trial, every day we're going to hear and see that video.
Oh, it's going to be
brutal. And every day we're going to hear somebody say, well, why didn't we know about it the last time? Because Rahm Emanuel sat on it.
Yeah, it's all bad.
And that will build. And that's going to build during the primary season.
Now, if you're so the runoff's February, right? And then the election's April. Is that how it goes? It's top two?
Top two.
Yeah, that video, the first time I watched it, you're sick to your stomach.
Oh, yeah.
The last shots are
slam dunk.
His body's just bouncing. It's just
slam
terrible.
Dunk manslaughter. I don't know if it's slam dunk murder. But well, the guy did not charge him. Anita Alvarez charged him. And then she got run out by Kim Fox and Tony Preckwinkle, right?
Yeah, one shot maybe, 16 bullets.
All 16.
Murder.
All 16 in the body.
Yeah, murder.
For the theater of radio in the mind, Jeff Carlin is about 10 feet away from us and behind glass. Pat Brady and I are about 5 feet apart. If all three of us started trying to shoot each other, there's no way, if we had each had a clip and a 9mm, there's no way we would, everyone would hit everybody.
Right.
It just doesn't happen that way in real life. You've covered enough.
Oh, yeah.
Done enough murder cases, right?
Right.
So 16. Now, what is the political effect of that, Mr. Brady?
Rahm gets blamed for it all, I would think.
Right.
What do you think?
I think Rahm's going to wear the jacket for it.
Yeah.
And the behind-the-scene thing right now on the Democratic side is Rahm, the mayor, who's very smart at what he does,
sure,
trying to mitigate that problem by taking care of African-American leadership in terms of the budget and stuff like
that.
We
saw the airport deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you watch it, and I don't pay as close attention to the detail as you do on the city stuff, but he's made a fairly nice recovery in the last year on talking about the great things in the city.
Oh, yeah.
and giving the deals away to the
people. He's Mayor Zorro now. He's Mayor Zorro. I expect him to be speaking Spanish because he's going to – what's going to happen is he knows that Laquan McDonald video comes out, he better have Hispanics. And Hispanics and African-Americans are in direct competition for jobs on the low-end scale.
And they're the big number.
And they're the big numbers. No. So you're going to see and I'm not reading or seeing, and I didn't write it, and I didn't – I mentioned it a few times, but I'm not – doing big takeouts on it, because I want to see who's going to be is someone else going to take up this cross of mine, right?
Well, you've been carrying it, it's not
fascinating.
But who's going to, there's so many people that are, who's going to be number two in that list? One or two. I mean, Rahm, you'd think would get one.
McCarthy,
or two.
Is he real? Is he really serious? And then does Chewy get in, and you have a three-way and a runoff? Here's the thing about Rahm. I don't think he can survive another runoff.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's
I mean, last time was a shocker.
So if you're all these, the rich, wealthy oligarchs of Chicago, some of whom support Rauner and who are concerned about the future of the city, which is why they have Rahm in there to kind of raise taxes and trying to get the ship in order.
But the big issue with even the taxes, obviously the big issue in property tax, but the other day I saw him doing or maybe it was yesterday, a press conference on this predictive modeling for policing in the stations. At least it appears that he's trying to address the problem with some advanced policing.
Yes, he is. When next we see each other, probably I will not be wearing a costume, although I was kind of thinking about going as Zorro.
You'd be a good Zorro.
Like Zorro, like Rahm Zorro.
I'm going as a tax bill. That's the scariest thing.
I might go as a grumpy,
grumpy middle-aged guy.
Grumpy middle-aged conservative man.
I'm an angry middle-aged, post-middle-aged guy.
Pat Brady, thanks so much for being here
today.
Anytime.
Always good to see you, Jeffrey. And, you too.
Next on our line is none other than the certified badass of Illinois politics, but I will not refer to her like that in print. I've already said so. But in, you know, podcasts and tweets, I can.
Anything's possible.
Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza, who famously was riding her bike in July and saw a truck flash by her running through a red light. It ended up in a crash. She chased the guy down. It was none other than Quarters Boyle, John Quarters Boyle of the Coalition for Better Government. Susana Mendoza is on the line. Hey, Susana.
How's it going, John?
Good. Have you run into any of the Coalition for Better Government friends down in Springfield while you're there at the veto session?
No. No, I didn't. I wouldn't expect to either. I don't really haven't seen any of those guys in many years. I don't know what they're doing these days.
Comptroller, one thing that's amazing about all this is that you actually confront – people don't usually do this, and political people don't do it. But you confronted a guy, and then when you found out later, after you sent the video to the police, and you can see it on the Tribune website, after you found out who it was, that it was a guy connected to, you know, Chicago politics, you being a Democrat, he being, I guess, I don't know what, but part of a larger enterprise – you didn't back off. You kept going to the court. You kept pushing it and saying that these charges should be upgraded. I find that to be fascinating. Fascinating.
Well, it's just the right thing to do, John. I mean, you know, when people think, you know, I get that question all the time. Well, did you know it was him when I was videotaping him? And I say, no, I had no idea it was him. And so people wonder, well, would you still have done it if you had known it was him? And I think anybody who knows me, I would have, like... I think about this all the time because I'm like, I wish I would have known it was him. Maybe I should have gotten back on my bike and chased him when he turned left. I don't know. That was probably crazy. I should not have done that. But the thought is that I would have doubled down, no doubt about it. And this is my opportunity to double down to make sure that this guy doesn't, you know, just get away with it. And I hope he doesn't. You know, I mean, at the very least that he gets found guilty of the charges that he's been that have been leveled against him. And, you know, I would hope that after reviewing the video, maybe additional charges might be brought or even upgraded. So, again, I'm not the state's attorney. I'm not the prosecutor. I don't make those decisions. But I at least want the courts to know that I care about this. And most importantly, the victims, that, you know, they're not politically connected. So, you know, they should have somebody who's advocating for them.
I was talking with some aldermen this morning before doing this podcast, the Chicago Way. And they were asking me about it. And they said, man, I mean, like, could I go chase some guy down, some bad guy? Like, they all want to copy you. What is this? What do you think of that?
It's good. You know, the more the merrier. I mean, everybody should stop to help when asked. But I know that it's not the natural instinct maybe for some folks, right? I mean, some people are a little bit more cautious. I would call that maybe being a little bit smarter. But in the moment, the woman asked if I would please help. And, of course, it wouldn't have ever crossed my mind not to. And then at that point, I want to be as helpful as I can be, not just to the victims on the scene, but also ultimately to the victims in the long run by getting a good image and a good video, if possible, of the perpetrator. So I was thinking, what can I do to be helpful to the victims and also to the police and prosecutors, you know, to make sure that this guy gets held accountable? We were hoping that the video would actually help to keep him on the scene, knowing that he's being videotaped, but... he still got away in terms of, I would say, with probably flunking badly a breathalyzer. But at the very least, you know, we were able to find out who he is or who he was. And hopefully, you know, something good will come out of this. And hopefully, yes, more aldermen and politicians or whoever, just people who call themselves public servants, you know, I think we should carry ourselves. Not that we should be held to a higher standard, but I think we should hold ourselves to a higher standard than what we'd expect of, you know, our everyday neighbor.
One thing that this has taught us, and it's probably the most unfortunate lesson of all, is that in Cook County, in Illinois, I guess anywhere, if you're, and I don't know anything about his physical state. I know what you've said, that he looked impaired or worse. I don't know that for a fact. There were no breathalyzers, but that's the point. So if you get in an accident, car accident, and you say you've been drinking, I guess the lesson of all this is take off. Don't stay. Run. Isn't it?
I know. That's horrible. That is totally horrible. And here's a guy who, it's not his first rodeo with the law. So, you know, he took his chances and said, if I get caught, I mean, I can't speak for him, but in my mind, this is probably what he was thinking. If I get caught, the charges are going to be so much worse than if I leave. So, yeah, back in the old days, you didn't need a breathalyzer. I mean, if there were witnesses who said the guy was clearly walking around impaired or smelled of alcohol, then that would probably be enough. These days, we can't do stuff like that anymore, right? That would never probably be held up in court. But it is unfortunate. It makes you really wonder. On the flip side, though, there are laws in place now that provide stiffer penalties for people who do leave the scene of an accident. And as a matter of fact, when I was in the legislature, I passed a law. And I believe the name of it was Patrick Leahy Law, because of a little boy. He was, like, I think in central Illinois maybe at the time, who had been run over. John, he was like four-year-old little boy, I think, or six maybe when he died. I have his picture with a little soccer ball, you know, and I was a little soccer player myself, and I had a little boy who someday might play soccer. Your kids did. And, you know, I see that picture, and it reminds me of that could have been a victim of this guy. But, you know, when I passed that law, it was to take away the statute of limitations on hit-and-run drivers where there's personal injury or death. And so this is an issue that I actually really care about. It's just ironic that I happened to stumble upon this, but there's no way I would have left without helping.
We're talking to Susanna Mendoza, Illinois controller, a person that I've, you know, we've had our differences. I've criticized you. I've also appreciated you. It is interesting that where you are politically, I just want to get to this so people understand. In the old days of politics, at the beginning of this, you know, say 100 years ago, there was a guy who was very studious, very hardworking. He took all these jobs that others didn't want. He took them and learned how Illinois government and Chicago government actually worked. And when he was ready, after being comptroller, after being the clerk, serving in the legislature, he was ready to run the city of Chicago. You know what his name was? Richard J. Daley. I see Mike Madigan, who I've had differences with, but also I respect him greatly, methodical, learning, keeping his mouth shut, learning, moving up the political chain. And now I see a lot of dilettantes out there who just show up and maybe, you know, wear outlandish clothing and talk outlandishly, and they're really nothing. And then I see Susanna Mendoza, city clerk, legislator, Illinois comptroller. I'm seeing you on the same path, Ms. Mendoza, that other people have been on who've become quite powerful in this state because they know, they learn what government really does. For example, in the comptroller's office, you're about paying bills or not paying bills if you don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
But politically speaking, historically, it was important to both parties to have this job because it meant who got paid. And whether they get paid or not, there's a list of who gets paid, who doesn't get paid. And that's the list of clout. That's the list of influence. That's the list of, not that you would do that, not that you would take one side or another, but you know who these groups are. You know who these vendors and these powerful interests that have lobbyists and so forth behind them. I find this the track that you're on, the curve that you're on, is exactly the kind of thing that people should do if they're interested in long-term leadership and powerful position, like mayor of Chicago, which is why I always put you there as a, even though we disagree or not, as a formidable candidate for mayor someday in the city of Chicago. What do you say to that?
Well, thank you for that very nice intro, I guess, there about your thoughts about my career path. But let me just be really clear, John. I have never looked to that next seat for that next move. And I think people who don't know me will have a hard time believing that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just who I've always been. I mean, if you look at the jobs that I've had, when I became state rep, I was a baby. I think I was 27 years old when I got elected. I ran when I was 25 against the Speaker's candidate. I lost by 55 votes that first time, and then I knew for sure that I could do this and that I wanted to do it better than anybody else. And then I ran again, and I took on the Speaker's candidate the second time. And then I won the second time, not with 55 votes, but with 55% of the votes. And ever since then, I've just really focused on doing the job and doing it as best as I possibly could. I'm building relationships with both sides of the aisle, which, you know, I was super proud that probably 85 to 90% of all the bills I ever carried as a state rep had, you know, those five top co-sponsors that you see up on the board, right, when the votes go up. It was always me, two Democrats, and two Republicans. And I made a point of doing that because I never wanted to be dependent on my own party for being able to deliver on a vote for my district. I thought this is how you get things done. I just like to get things done, right? So I wasn't thinking like, oh, someday I want to be city clerk. Just the opportunity arose when the mayor decided not to run, and then the current clerk ran for mayor. And I thought, here's an opportunity for me to get to show what type of managerial skills I have. I know I can do it, and I'd love to have the opportunity to manage the clerk's office, which is the most visited office in the city. So not very sexy office, right? But I think I was joking around that we were like Justin Timberlake bringing sexy back to the clerk's office. What we did with the year-round sales of city stickers, people told
that's
me
that's another
impossible.
Issue. Listen,
yeah,
I don't want
to do it.
I don't want to bring up, you know, the new order is I don't want to talk about sexy. But I will tell you this.
Well, I said it. Not
Richard,
you.
The two guys that I don't consider sexy are Richard J. Daley, the late, and mm-hmm. Michael J. Madigan. But I'll tell you one thing. They learned politics, and they were methodical and detail-oriented. And I have to say, Mendoza, Mrs. Mendoza, I see you the same way. So
thanks, John.
We'll see what happens. I don't want to freak out all my progressive friends.
No, and I just,
all my progressive friends who hate me will say this is the kiss of death because I said some nice thing about you.
No, right? I appreciate it. I'm sure there'll be another day where you maybe, you know, are not so nice. I hope that you just give me a chance to really show you who I've been all these years. This is who I am. I'm no different today than when I started, and I'm very committed to just being a public servant and not to be on some track for power.
I'm just really
honored and privileged that, you know, I get to serve. That's pretty awesome. And now I get to serve in the one job that most people would probably not want, which is the controllers. But it's the most important job, I think, right now in the state of Illinois. And it really is like that last line of defense for people who don't have those lobbyists and paid advocates. So I get to be that for people. And I could care less if they're Democrats or Republicans. They're just Illinoisans. And I have a four-year-old. I want him to be proud of the state that he lives in. And I want him to actually always live in Illinois.
Well,
so this is what I'm kind of fighting for, you know, and it's like I said, it's not super sexy, but we're making this office of controller relevant, like we made the clerk's office, and we're showing the taxpayers why there's value. To your point about being able to see or control where the money's going, guess what? The controller doesn't really get to see where all these bills are, which is why I've been working so hard on my Debt Transparency Act.
Well, that's good.
Had a huge victory on. You know, everybody
good luck
needs to see
on
the
that.
Money.
Good luck on that. And if you're not the mayor of Chicago, please, you could run the National Soccer Office. What is that? They're located
here. Hey, thing's pretty that thing's really corrupt too, right? People,
right? Exactly.
Isn't
you're
that
ready.
Kind of jail or something?
You're ready because you know I've known you. You know the Chicago way, and I've known you since you were 20 something years old. Good luck. Good luck to you, and thank you very much for being on the show. And also,
thanks for paying attention to this case. I really appreciate it. I mean, I wouldn't even know if quarters bullet, but not for you. I grew up reading your columns too, and
that's how old I am.
I shouldn't say grew up because you're not that old. You're not that old. I take it back. But my point is, everybody's been educated on this guy because of you, and so you being there to follow this case means a lot to those victims, too, and just to justice. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Comptroller. That's Illinois Comptroller Susanna Mendoza telling the story of Quarters Boyle on the Chicago way. Thanks, Susanna.
You got it. Thank you, John.
See you. You know what? What a day. What a perfect day to be with Jeff Carlin. Jeff Carlin.
It's pie weather, John.
We're
in pie weather.
I know that there's a crow pie that I'm supposed to eat. A crow pie, kind of like the Everton Football Club pie, a humble pie. But for Chicago Fire, I shall not, the fire will not eat crow, but I shall, if you can make it with cumin, allspice, pearl onions, braised crow in a nice thick savory gravy, and a crust. And, of course, you know nothing about crows. Jeff Carlin, Pat Brady, and Susanna Mendoza, the Illinois Comptroller, with her little video camera going after John Porter's Boyle, saying, hey, hey, say cheese. And also, remember this, look to see what people, not only what people write and talk about, look to see what they don't talk about, what they don't write about. What's going on in this country is that we have ideological preferences amongst those of us who say we want to talk about everything in the news. And that's a serious problem for our republic. This has been John Cass, The Chicago Way. We'll talk to you next week.